Welcome to LOA Today. I'm Walt Thiessen here with Life Coach Cindy Chavez. Today is Wednesday, September the 30th, 2020. It is 4 p.m. New York time, and wherever you are in the world, thanks for joining us for another episode of LOA Today, your daily dose of happy. And I'm happy that we are in the middle of discussing Cindy's book,
Yay.
The Lovely Magician's Guide to Soulmate Yay. Success. And we made a lot of progress last week, Cindy. We got like two-thirds of the way through the book. So
we did. And, you know, I just thought of something right now. Because I think last time we might have talked a little bit about mirror work.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're talking about self-love and mirror work. And I'm a little shocked that I don't know this book inside and out. Love languages, I think it is about. I mean, I've heard people mention this book over and over, and I have not read it. It's a classic book from long time ago, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it has to do with that people have different love languages, the things that make them feel loved.
Right.
And so, like, I know one of them is like receiving gifts, and one mm-hmm. of them is service, I think, like doing, you know, if people want to. And so they talk about, like, if your love language is receiving gifts, then that's probably how you show love, like by giving someone gifts. And if they don't get that and their real love language is like that they want to spend time with you, then that may not be, you know, until they understand those different languages. I think that's the gist of it. And so I actually had a client recently that listens to our podcast. She might be listening to us now. And she and I have talked many times about mirror work.
Mm-hmm.
And we hadn't really talked about too much recently, but she sent me a note and said that she had kind of an aha moment.
Oh.
She said, because I think mirror work, I don't think she's ever done it for 30 days. We have talked about that, right? And she said, you may absolutely be right. This may require 30 days until it creates a shift in the brain or whatever happens, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. But she said, I started thinking about love languages. And some people's love language, I think, is actually words, right? Like when you look in the mirror and you say, I love you.
Sure, yeah.
And she said her love language was spending time. So she said, I think that it might be better for my own self-love work to create time that I'm spending with myself, like designated, right? Like take yourself on a date or plan to spend an hour in the chair with a good book, kind of like this is my me time kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
So I told her that's an awesome insight.
Mm-hmm.
And also the next time you pass by a mirror and you see yourself, just say, I love spending time with you.
Yeah. Oh, that's really good. I like that. Yeah.
So I thought, oh, I got to bring that up on the podcast because it's such a good, like, little hack, right? It's like, okay.
Well, it also points to the fact that it's not about trying to kind of build up our feelings about ourselves through one way. I mean, there are a lot of ways to go about doing it.
Yes. Yeah. And that's why the thing we left off with last week was talking about intention.
Yeah.
I mean, like we talked about how, you know, if I was taking care of someone else's cat, that was my example. It said I could still feed and water the cat, but I probably wouldn't do it with the intention that you do when you're giving harmony and joy their water and food, right? You're cooing at them and saying, you know. And so it's that kind of thing. It's like when you get yourself a glass of water. I mean, I know that sounds really basic, but that's where we start. We start with our foundational stuff. And I can't tell you the number of people that I've spoken with that when I start to bring up self-love with them, I ask them very simple questions that have to do with very basic care. Like, do you drink enough water? I spoke to a very professional woman one time that worked long shifts in a hospital. And I asked her, I kept feeling my intuition nudging me to ask her if she drinks enough water. And I kept avoiding that question because I thought that is such a stupid question. First of all, this is a person in the medical field. Of course she knows to drink enough water. And second, it's just don't ask it. But my intuition was like, nag.
Yeah, right. Got to ask it.
My intuition is a nag. And so finally I said, okay, I'm just going to ask you this question. It may be silly, but do you drink enough water? And she said, oh, there are days when I don't drink water at all day because I get so busy and I don't have a break and blah. You know, she told me all the reasons why, but I was shocked.
Yeah.
So it's not only doing something good for yourself, like that's really basic, like getting enough sleep and drinking water and eating healthy food, mm-hmm. but also doing it with a loving intention. Like if you had a baby and you knew that baby hadn't had water and you were out, right, you would say, this baby it's hot out here and this baby's got to have some water.
Yeah, right.
You would do it out of love and concern and care. So treat yourself with that level of love and concern and care.
And I just need to put in a little bit of an aside that's not directly related to what we're saying, but I feel like I need to say it because I want to send out well wishes to my niece, Michaela, who just gave birth to her first daughter, Riley, yesterday. So just had to throw it out there.
That's wonderful. Welcome, baby.
Yeah.
Yay. That is wonderful news.
Riley took a long time to get here. She was timing it. Like, okay, I'm not ready yet. I'm not ready yet.
I had one of those.
And then they said, okay, we're going to have to induce the baby. And then all of a sudden things started to happen. Just, okay, all right. I get this picture. I'm coming.
I will tell you, I had one that took forever. It was like weeks late.
Wow.
And then it took forever once the labor started, 36 hours. And this is a kid that, you know, he's an adult now in his 30s, but his whole life, he was so deliberate
mm-hmm.
and he was so paced, self-paced, right? Like this was the kid that if we forgot a book and had to go back to the house on the way to school, he would get out of the car and walk to the door and it'd be like, go, go, go. And he would walk up and then, you know, then he played baseball and he was fast as lightning, right? Because he needed to be.
Right.
But the rest of the time, it was like, we used to joke and say he had one speed on,
right?
So you have to tell this niece to be prepared.
No kidding. Yeah.
Our kids, we come into the world with our own stuff, right? With our
Absolutely.
Own set of settings, with our own settings. That's right.
And I don't know why I even want to mention this, but very, very, very often when babies come into the world, they come in with blue eyes and later on their eyes change. This one came in with brown eyes.
Really?
Yeah. I that's pretty unusual.
My youngest came in with brown eyes, dark brown eyes, mm-hmm. and then they turned a kind of gold color, like my mother had gold eyes.
Wow.
And then they turned dark brown again, like over the course of his life. Yeah. Yeah, it was fun to watch.
I'll have to find out what happens with Riley. So. Yeah.
And before we dive back into the book, because you haven't mentioned it, and I don't know if you know this, but I'm going to mention it. It is International Podcast Day.
So, I did not know that.
Thank you, Walt, for being the podcast host here. And
that's fabulous.
Happy International Podcast Day.
Yeah. Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Thank you for bringing that up. I didn't know about that.
I just saw it by happenstance.
Which fabulous.
We know nothing's random, right? Right.
Well, this is true. Yes. Anyway, we were about two-thirds of the way through, and I like the title of the next section of the book, the next chapter, if you will, because an open heart, that's the name of the section, an open heart covers a lot of important stuff where the law of attraction is concerned. So I'm going to be curious to see how you tie it into relationships.
Yes, an open heart. All right, so part of my own personal story is in this chapter. So I'm just going to start reading. An open heart. Living with an open heart requires vulnerability. And yet we often deny our vulnerability because we don't want to get hurt. Mm-hmm. We may develop a hard shell or put an energetic wall up because we're attempting to avoid heartbreak, hurt feelings, or disappointment. So I want to share a personal story with you because I think it will be helpful, especially if you have closed up because of a bad relationship experience or a broken heart. So I was involved in an emotionally abusive relationship for more than 2 decades, and I have some pretty serious experiences with being hurt deeply and consistently. My experience also extends to making myself nearly invulnerable. I put on a hard shell with a soft smile because no one needed to actually see that I was putting up a wall of defense. And I decided that I wouldn't let myself get hurt. I would be strong, invincible. I would not be vulnerable. And looking back, I realized that this seemed to make the pain even worse. The excruciating pain of wanting a healthy relationship so badly and not seeing any way it would ever happen. Eventually, my marriage ended in a nasty divorce, and my own decision to not allow myself to be vulnerable kept me from seeking the support I so desperately needed. My best friend didn't even know how bad my marriage had been. I didn't want to appear weak or out of control, so I put on a smile and I just pretended that everything was fine, even though it wasn't. It was painful. I finally did reach out for support from my wonderful group of friends and family. I did a lot of personal growth work. I learned how to truly and deeply love myself, and I did finally heal from the pain. It took time. It took more than 2 years. And after I healed is where my story becomes really useful in answering this question that I got from a reader. The question said, how do I keep the sensitivity and vulnerability of my spirit without feeling hurt all of the time? As I healed, I began to blossom. I opened. I began to really, truly love my life. I began to really, truly love myself. I felt so alive and so happy. I was living with intention, being authentic, and it felt magical. I had found my path. I knew my purpose. And I was amazed at how beautiful my life was becoming every single day. I felt whole, and because of that, I felt that I was ready for a relationship. An awesome relationship, of course. This time, I knew what that really meant. A soulmate relationship full of love, passion, laughter, and mutual respect. I met a wonderful man. I fell in love. Everything was completely magical, and then it happened. We had a small disagreement. I cried. We made up. I was okay. The world didn't end. And then, a few weeks later, I got hurt again. And this time, there was no reasonable or logical excuse for it. It was a total misunderstanding. I knew I was making a mountain out of a molehill, but there it was. I felt wounded. It was a small thing. In fact, it was something that wouldn't even have bothered most people, and yet something got triggered in me, and there I was feeling completely torn up about it, feeling so hurt over something so stupid, then had me questioning everything. Why am I suddenly being totally petty? I was asking myself. And this reaction was so unlike anyone I wanted to be. I honestly questioned whether I could do this relationship thing. Not a comfortable question to be asking yourself when you are a relationship coach.
No kidding.
I was wondering, what is wrong with me? I remember it like it was yesterday. I was standing in my closet. I was hanging up a sweater. I was feeling so frustrated about my own emotions, asking myself, why was I so sensitive? I felt so vulnerable. Uh-oh. Then it hit me. The vulnerability that was allowing me to feel heartache was the very same vulnerability that was allowing me to feel so open, so seen, so heard, so loved, so connected. And my vulnerability and sensitivity were also the very things that allowed my sweetheart to be open to me, to be honest and real and authentic and vulnerable with me. I remember the epiphany-like realization that I needed to decide now whether it was worth it, because I knew I could not have one without the other. Was the risk of a broken heart worth the magic of true love? Was feeling hurt over an occasional misunderstanding worth feeling the thrill of deep and pure connection? Was I willing to be open to being triggered so that my own soul, my own wounds could be healed? Was this wide open heart that was totally vulnerable and unprotected worth the rapture of having a soulmate relationship? My answer was and is an unequivocal yes. And as an aside, not in the book, but I did marry him. So misunderstandings and miscommunications are inevitable in a relationship, especially a brand new relationship. These things happen because we don't yet know each other well, and they are the very things that enable us to know each other better. These experiences are the very things that give us practice in responding in a conscious way, in being, with a capital B, who we want to be. Our intimate relationships are the clearest mirror we have to show us who we are. And sometimes it feels uncomfortable. Sometimes it can hurt. But these things are also the place where we both can grow into our full potential as friends, as lovers, as soulmates, and as human beings. Now, you do not have to feel hurt all of the time. You can certainly allow yourself to open, to be vulnerable, to be sensitive, and to allow those qualities to support you in connecting, in loving yourself and others, and in becoming stronger emotionally. If you are in a place where you're feeling hurt all of the time, it's time to figure out why. Basically, when we feel hurt or any other uncomfortable, unwanted feeling or emotion, it is because we have a need that is not being met. Vulnerability and the kind of growth we experience in a soulmate relationship can be uncomfortable. However, loving relationships contain mutual respect and are not abusive in any way. Abusive behavior is never acceptable. Abuse is always the poison apple in a relationship. So your self-love and self-respect will always say no to abuse. Staying in an abusive relationship is a very big red flag that you are not loving yourself. You cannot be showing yourself love and allowing yourself to be abused at the same time. So if you are experiencing pain in your current relationship or in your life, it is because there is a need you have that is not being met. Making sure that you're getting your needs met is what self-love is all about. And remember, you don't need a certain person to do a certain thing to meet your needs. Your needs are your responsibility. And taking responsibility for your own happiness is the most powerful thing you can do as a conscious creator. Pay attention to your feelings. Your feelings are a miracle, all of them. They are there to guide you into the fullest, most joyful expression of your unique path and purpose.
Yeah, that's quite a story that you're telling there. And it's a story I'm sure many people can identify with in one form or another, because it can be quite the wake up whenever we find ourselves feeling hurt about stuff, especially if it's kind of a surprise. You know, like in your story, where did that come from? I don't even know why I'm feeling that way. So it can be kind of a shock.
That's a real telling thing too. And it's really important, because if you feel hurt because of something that happened and you start asking yourself those questions, like why do I feel hurt? Mm-hmm. You know, if you realize that you feel hurt because this behavior that was pointed at you is unconscionable, then that's a different story.
Yes.
Right? Because we're human and we should not be invulnerable, right? We should not, we should not be in a place where nothing ever hurts us. There's something going on if that's the case, right? We get to a place with our personal growth where we are not easily offended.
Right.
That's fine. Like, we want to get there. Yeah, we don't want to be offended by every single thing. We want to be able to realize that this is really about you and not me. But still, if someone behaves in a way that is hurtful and we get hurt, that doesn't mean that we haven't grown, because we are human. So we do, we do feel things. So finding out what that need is and then figuring out how to get that need met without manipulation.
That was the phrase that I really liked the best. I don't remember exactly how you said it, but you were talking about needs that haven't been met, unmet needs. And when we think about, you raised the point that we need to, if we're feeling hurt about something, we need to kind of ask ourselves what that's all about. But very often, most of us perhaps will try to answer that in terms of a situation that happened. So-and-so treated me this way. I had that thing happen, and I was going out doing this thing, and this other thing went on, and so forth. We rarely think of it in terms of a need being met.
Right, right. And, you know, we of course have basic human needs. Like, we know what those are, right? We need food, we need water, we need sex, we need sleep, we need oxygen. I mean, those are kind of like basic. But there are so many other human needs as well. We have the need to be respected. Mm-hmm. We have the need to be seen and heard. Those are really big. If you're in a relationship and you just don't feel seen, don't feel heard, that's not healthy. I actually think that this is why social media is so big, is because it gives people an opportunity to be seen and to be heard.
Oh, yeah.
Right. And so whenever, here's the easiest rule of thumb. It is that, and the best example, I think, is that if your needs are met, you feel comfortable or you feel happy.
Yeah.
Or even pleasure. It's even pleasurable. Mm-hmm. If your needs are not met, you feel uncomfortable, or you feel an emotion that doesn't feel comfortable. You feel sad. You feel frustrated, or it may even be painful to you. If you feel something you're not liking, you're not getting your needs met. If something feels good, then you're getting your needs met. Think about when you're hungry. If you've ever gone extended time without food and your body starts to have hunger pains, you feel it and you feel hungry. And then what happens? You eat a meal and you're satiated and you're comfortable again. Now, if you eat too much, you may be uncomfortable because you didn't meet the need for the right amount. Right.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So when we look at our emotions this way, and allow them to help us figure out what our real need is, not what the other person did wrong.
Right.
Now, it may end up there, right? If you have a need for respect and you're with a partner who does not respect you and they're disrespectful all the time and that hurts you, but it's digging down. It's like, I feel terrible. Why do I feel terrible? Why do I always feel terrible when I'm with this person? What do I have a need for? Wow. I think I have a need for respect. Mm-hmm. And I don't feel like I'm getting any respect here. Mm-hmm. Then it can be pointed at behavior and say, you know, when you do X and Y, I don't feel like that's respectful. Or I feel frustrated because I have a need for respect.
Sure.
Here's a little hint. People sometimes say they feel disrespected or they feel abused or something like that. Those aren't feelings.
That's a good point. Yes.
Those are thoughts.
Yes.
Those are thoughts that are actually judgments of the other person. Right? I'm making a judgment about you. I think you're disrespectful. I'm making a judgment about you. I think you're abusive. But the feelings are angry and frustrated and sad and scared. Those are the feelings. And so it's good to be able to communicate that in a precise manner.
Let's talk about that for just one more moment too. And I want to actually interject something that I forgot to mention before we started doing the book. And that is, if you want to be following along, this is in the LOA Today app. So make sure that you, if you haven't already downloaded it, download the app. And in the LOA Today app that you can find on both iPhones and Android phones, At the top, under goodies, you'll find the ebook laid out there for you as a value add for including the download in your phone every single day and having it there. So, you know, feel free to follow along. It's, I think it's actually helpful as you're reading from your own books and need to be following along. I was just noticing that as you were reading. It's like, yeah, I really find myself going deeply into what you're saying just because I'm reading it while you're hearing, while I'm hearing it from you.
Excellent. That's yeah. Funny. My husband, when we first met and discovered that we both were readers and liked to read and had been reading some of the same books, I do not like audio books.
Mm-hmm.
Because, only because, if I'm just listening without anything visual, I just either completely go somewhere else and say, oh, wait a minute, what were they saying? Like I completely, or I fall asleep, right? But my husband would listen to audiobooks, but he would actually listen to the audio and read the book at the same time.
He does, okay.
Yeah, and he said, yeah, that was really like, you know, I thought that was interesting. So that's kind of what you're doing here. If you're listening to the podcast and reading along,
It does make it more intense. It makes it more real. It makes it easier for, I'm sure it makes it easier for someone who's going through something similar to what you went through to handle what you're saying because yes, they're more intently focused, but they're also more intently focused on not just the words, but on the tonality of your voice. They're hearing and seeing both at the same time. And sometimes written word can actually be a little bit misleading. Just because the person writing thinks of it one way and the person reading it thinks of it the other way. But when you also add in the sound part, the sound actually reinforces what it is that you're writing.
This is actually the reason why I always advise my clients to not have serious discussions via text message.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. When I was dating my husband, he knew that about me from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And we both agreed. We both had that same kind of like, no, text messages are for... I'm running 5 minutes late, you know, I'll be there in 10 minutes. That's what text messages are for. And one day I was out shopping and he sent me a message and I answered it. And then he sent me another message and we kind of started messaging back and forth. And somehow it turned into a more serious discussion.
Mm.
And all of a sudden my phone was ringing and I said, hello. And he said, I know you don't want to have this discussion via text. It seems like it's starting to get serious. So we should have the discussion on the phone. And it really does make a difference. You can't hear those emotions and tonality in a text message. And sometimes they get read completely wrong and it just complicates things that are already maybe stressful. So
and it doesn't take much. It really doesn't take much at all. Now, one other thing I want to bring up, and this may tie into what happens in the next chapter, so you'll have to tell me that. But as we're talking about paying attention to feelings and identifying unmet needs and so forth, one of the things I always think about and look for is what you often call radical responsibility, taking responsibility for your own feelings.
Yes.
Taking responsibility for your own thoughts, taking responsibility for what's going on in your life. I guess what I'm asking is, can you, since this chapter includes your personal story where you dealt with an abusive husband and, you know, he was clearly contributing to that. Can you give us a little more clarity about, okay, where does personal responsibility fit into that kind of a situation?
Well, where it fits in, I think, and I think this is especially pertinent for conscious creators. And I say that because of my experience of finding out about law of attraction, conscious creation, and, you know, trying it out, right?
Yeah.
Trying it out. And I was just creating miracles everywhere. Like people that knew me were like, wow, like you're amazing. You will talk about something that will happen the next day. Like, you know, you just speak it. And well, it wasn't happening in one particular area. I was actually at some point teaching classes on law of attraction out in the world. And yet my relationship was really hard. And I kept trying to, you know, I'm making air quotes, but LOA my relationship. And this is where LOA gets really tricky when there are other people involved, whether it's you know, a spouse, a family member, a business partner. Mm-hmm. If you have two business partners and one of them wants one thing and the other one wants another, you know, LOA can start to look like manipulation.
Yeah.
And what happens sometimes is that there's this idea, and I had this idea. I don't know where it came from. I think it came from religion. I think it came from upbringing. It came from our society. But the idea was you reap what you sow. And if you're good to everyone, then people will be good to you. Okay, well, there's some truth to that, right? If you're vibing high, right? Okay. But I was being good to someone on a consistent basis. And I was trying to be even better. I was trying to be better at everything. I was trying to be prettier. I was trying to cook better meals. I was trying to keep a cleaner house. I was trying to be nicer. I was trying, you know, I was trying so hard that if I could make myself perfect, that will fix this.
Yeah.
But it wasn't about me being perfect. And at some point, you just can't do anymore. Mm-hmm. Right? And I kept thinking, but I'm being so good to people. And it's not coming back to me in this one instance. And then I realized the part I was missing. Here's the puzzle piece that was not there. It was self-love and self-respect.
Yes.
Because I wasn't respecting myself. How do I know? Because I was allowing someone to be disrespectful. And I always use this example. I'm like, you know, let's just take it out of the human realm and say I have a cute little dog that stays with me and I get a new neighbor and the new neighbor comes over and immediately starts insulting my little dog. That's the ugliest little dog I've ever seen. Why would you want a stupid pet like that? But I would say, excuse me, you're going to have to leave.
Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't just sit there and let this new neighbor completely insult my little pet. Well, but I was letting someone insult me.
Yeah.
So it didn't have to do with that. There's two ways this magic mirror shows up. And that is, you know, we talk about relationships. We just read relationships are the most, your intimate relationships are the clearest, brightest, magnifying mirrors of you. And I understood that in theory, but I kept thinking, well, why isn't my generosity, my kindness, why isn't it being reflected back to me? Well, the mirror works in two ways. Sometimes it's just like that. It's reflected right back to you. And other times it's reflecting to you the way you're treating you, not the way you're treating others. It's the way you're treating yourself. And I wasn't giving myself the respect I would give my little dog, you know.
Right, yeah.
I was just taking it and thinking, well, if I repay these insults with kindness, eventually that kindness will come back. What happened was I realized I needed to start acting like someone who respected herself. Mm. And very gently, I started creating boundaries. And at its simplest, you know, a boundary is just letting someone know what's okay and what's not okay. And so I would just, in the kindest way I knew, say, that's not okay. It's not okay for you to talk to me that way. Or it's not okay for you to ask me how I am and then in the middle of my sentence to walk and leave the room. That's not okay.
Ooh, you really did that?
Oof. So those are the kind of things that I would say, this doesn't work for me. And what happened is I became very clear about what I needed, is that he decided he was going to go. And so I say this because just because you start loving yourself and respecting yourself doesn't mean that everyone around you will start loving you and respecting you.
That's right.
Some people, you know, just because the restaurant starts closing an hour earlier, some people aren't going to go back, right?
Yeah, right?
I mean, so it's like when you create boundaries, some people don't like them. Some people won't honor them. But if you keep them strong, sometimes those people will disappear from your life.
Mm-hmm.
The good news is, you know, that I now have someone who adores me and respects me and cherishes me and treats me like a queen, and we have a mutual respect for each other. And there is none of that disrespect. So, you know, I don't want people to think that, hey, I believe that as soon as you start loving yourself, everybody else in your life is going to suddenly change. Sometimes that does happen. Sometimes it does.
Sure. Depending on how resentful they are. But that's
sometimes it doesn't. But what will happen is that the reflection that you get will start showing you the love you have for yourself.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
So the people that do come into your life and that stay in your life and that are in your life will start to reflect that. That is the clearest reflection, not just of how you treat others. So if you're in that space where you feel like you're doing your very best to be kind and to treat everyone well and to be generous, and there's someone in your life that just doesn't give that back to you, that's the time to make the boundary that says, hey, this isn't okay.
It reminds me of a conversation, sort of a dialogue I had with somebody on social media very recently, in which he brought up the idea, the concept of what's called unconditional love. And as he was describing what he was meaning by it and so forth, I found myself kind of cringing, and I've always cringed at it. And I realized why it was I cringed at it, because the implication that is usually attached to the phrase unconditional love is that it's unconditional as opposed to conditional love. And the reason I resist that is, to me, conditional love isn't love at all. And so I made the point to him, there is no difference between unconditional love and love.
Conditional love is just a transaction.
Yeah, it, at best.
Right? It's transactional. Yeah. But unconditional love, what it sounds like we're really talking about here is just tolerating something.
Right. Yeah. And that's not love. I mean.
Well, but you can love someone and also not tolerate their.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. But claiming that love is where you put up with something that you really don't feel all that great about, that's not love.
No, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Is that that's what I did
for
years and years and years, is I tolerated something. I put up with it. And I have to say, you know, if it was 100% like that, I wouldn't have stayed, but there's always going to be the moments that are great. And so sometimes you tolerate because, well, and you tell yourself it's not that bad. But I can tell you now from experience of being in a relationship for the past almost 10 years, that's just amazing. Oh my goodness. It's night and day, right? It's
just, no doubt about it.
Yeah. So you're right. And I like your take. Love is love.
It is.
Love doesn't need to be labeled unconditional love or conditional love. If you're labeling it that way, you're talking about something besides love.
Quite different. Something quite different. Yeah.
Right.
And quite a bit lower vibrational, I might add, too. Because the moment you have to put the word conditional on there is the moment where you're not feeling that high vibe anymore. It's just, you can't. There's no way to do it.
No.
It's not possible. That's one of the reasons I really love the phrase you use, the radical responsibility. Because the way you've always explained that, to me, the part that resonated the most was the loving yourself part. That part is huge for me with that phrase. And I know you have the two meaning there, the two ways of understanding how the mirror works. But for me, that's the big part. Because that takes a lot.
Well, it's the main part.
It is the main part. Yeah.
Because we are often taught to treat other people a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
Right, because of our upbringing. There's a quote that I really love, and I have never been able to track down who said it. But the quote is that injudicious niceness is a socialized disease.
Oh boy, yeah.
And the thing is that we're often socialized to be nice, and in doing so, when we keep that up. Because we're taught that as little children, we should be nice to everyone. You'll be nice. If you can't say something nice, don't say anything at all. And all of these kind of ideas. And we carry that into adulthood. And sometimes it turns into just being a doormat and taking abuse.
Sure.
Because we're so attached to this idea that we have to be nice. Mm-hmm. And I remember when I was in coaching school back in 2009, or 10, there was a book, and it's an excellent book. It's called, Don't Be Nice, Be Real. I think that's the name of it.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my people that was in my circle at the time saw the book and said, "Oh my gosh, that's terrible." And I said, "What do you mean?" And they said, "The title of that book," like they were disgusted by it.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized that when they read the title, what their brain was translating it to say is, "Don't be nice, be mean."
Yeah.
You know, and I said, "You know, it seems like you think this is telling people not to be nice, to be mean, but it's saying, don't be nice, be real." And we can be real and still be kind.
It makes sense to me that that could be misinterpreted that way, because so often people use the phrase "get real" as a way of being mad at somebody else. Well, come on, get real. That kind of a thing. It's like a see where somebody could draw that kind of association.
Yeah. But so, you know, I've been in a relationship where I was nice. And now I'm in a relationship where I can be real.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, it's the better choice. You know how people say sometimes, "Look, I've been rich and I've been poor, and it's more fun to be rich."
Yeah, right, exactly. Yes. I also want to interject one other idea here and see what you think about it. One thing that I like to do, not 100% of the time, but a lot of the time, is to remind myself it's not about being nice, it's about kindness. And
yes.
It's about kindness that is specifically directed with intent, that I had intended. Not one because I was supposed to, not because it was somebody thought that it was the right thing to do, but because I wanted to express kindness.
Yeah.
And to me, there's a big difference between being nice and being kind.
Oh, there is. I've written at length about this. And being nice often shows up as being quiet,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, not wanting to call someone out for telling a joke that's racist,
mm-hmm.
or that's mean-spirited or demeaning to some group of people. We don't want to call them out on that joke because we want to be nice, so we just be quiet.
Yeah.
Being nice often is turning your head and looking the other way.
Mm-hmm.
There's a wonderful essay that was written that talks about Nazis were the nicest people. They were the neighbors that didn't want to get political, that were the nicest neighbors that didn't want to be political and just looked the other way as their neighbors were dragged off to by the Gestapo. And I mean, that's hard, but that's nice. Kindness is not that. Kindness is that I don't have to be mean to you. I don't have to be rude to you to get my point across. I don't have to be ugly and, you know, violent to you. I can just say, this is what I really need, and this does not work for me. And so this is what works and this is what doesn't. And maybe you didn't, you know, understand that before, but I'm making a boundary here. I would prefer if this is what happened.
And in the context of the example you were using, kindness is being Schindler.
Yes, exactly. So really, there aren't too many times that kindness is inappropriate.
Not really. There are a few. It's possible, but it's pretty rare.
It's possible.
Yeah.
Because it's like, well, kindness is going to be reserved for someone that deserves it. I don't know.
Well, it's not so much deserve. For me, it's vibrational.
I don't have the concept of deserve, so.
Yeah, for me, it's vibrational. If the person I'm interacting with is in low vibration mode, and they're choosing to be in low vibration mode deliberately with some sort of little malicious intent. I'm going to laugh at you if I do this thing. You know, I'm not going to be kind to that person. Because that person's not going to hear kindness at all. Mm. They're just not even going to recognize the words or the meaning behind it. So, you know, throwing kindness at somebody like that is just going to be a waste of time and energy.
Yeah, I think we talked about this the other day, and I thought that was really interesting. It was like, oh, wow. When you made a point that, like, when someone is basically trolling, I mean, when someone is in that low of a vibration, that kindness is such a higher vibration, they don't even hear it.
And not at all.
That is often what happens if you'll watch from a distance certain political conversations. like, I only speak to this for 10 seconds and we'll get back to it. But I saw some threads last night about the debates, and I couldn't believe these people watched the same debate I watched.
Yeah, sure.
They saw something different.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
I told my son, it's beautiful blue sky and sunny today here. And I was on the phone with him earlier, and he's in the same city. So I said, look out the window. And he said, yeah. And I said, see how hard it's raining? And he goes, right? He knew exactly what I was saying. It was that these other people that are in a different vibration watched the same thing I watched and saw something completely different, right?
Exactly.
So, yeah. So you're right about that. Kindness, but kindness is almost always appropriate.
Most of the time it is.
And you know what? It's not going to hurt anything for you to be kind, even if it's not appropriate. But niceness will hurt you if it's not appropriate.
Yeah, it can.
Right? Because it puts you in the position where you're tolerating something. And when you're tolerating something, you're actually like doing violence to your own vibration.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All right. So this is an interesting segue in the book. Back to the book. The section is called Safety and Self-Love.
Ah, yes.
A few years ago, now this would be a few years ago.
A few years ago.
I recognized a trending theme in some of my coaching sessions one week, the desire to feel safe. The common denominators, each client that communicated this was a woman, and all of them were referring to relationships with men. So I remember this week, I was on several calls, people kept talking about, I just want to feel safe. That I kept hearing, I just want to feel safe.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe that one of the most important, if not the important, relationship ingredients for a woman is safety. And when I speak of safety, I'm talking about physical safety, of course, and also emotional safety and sexual safety. So as a relationship coach, I hear this desire for safety expressed often. And as a woman, I can relate to it and understand this need. And one evening I was out riding my bike and I was just reflecting on my day. I was riding, I was thinking about this common thread throughout these recent coaching sessions. And I noticed a beautiful college age woman riding her bicycle around the lakes here on the campus. And she was not wearing a helmet. And cyclists without helmets is something I see too often. And this is not in the text, but my son was a pro cyclist for a number of years.
Mm-hmm.
And I know what can happen to a cyclist without a helmet. So I'm really particular, especially when these cyclists around this lake are riding in and out of traffic, right? And people with dogs on leashes. So it's something I see too often. And my thoughts turn to the drivers that I see that are texting while driving, talking on cell phones while driving. Once I saw someone working on a laptop while they were driving.
Really? Wow.
Once I saw a cyclist around the lakes with a cell phone on their shoulder with their head tilted over holding it, and they were doing something else with their hands. So they were riding without their hands on the handlebars and a cell phone on their shoulder.
Wow.
All right. So all of these activities are unsafe, and unfortunately, people engage in them all too frequently, and that's when these two trains of thought collided and merged into another thought. People often live out an identity that's not in alignment with their desire.
Mm.
So in this example, how can I expect to feel safe in a relationship if I'm consistently putting out a message to the universe that safety isn't really one of my primary concerns? So the world around us is a mirror that reflects exactly what's going on inside of us. Our life experience is always directly related to our identity. When what we say we want isn't showing up, the clue we're looking for can first be found within, and it shows up in our outside experience, in our relationships with other people and things. So our outer experience is a mirror of our level of self-love. When we decide to start loving ourselves fully, everything in our outer experience changes for the better, including our relationships, of course.
Really good. Yeah, really, really good. And that it's a nice adjunct to what we were talking about before, because we were talking about the different aspects of, you know, loving oneself and how that's a major role in personal radical responsibility and so on and so forth. Adding in the safety piece basically adds another layer to that, is what that does.
And that goes for anything that you're saying that you desire, right?
Yeah, sure.
Well, whatever it is. It's interesting to look at it outside of the container that you're putting it in when you say you want it. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I want to be safe. I want to feel safe in my relationship. But what about the rest of my life? Am I acting like safety is an issue?
Yeah.
So I thought that was important. So, all right. So winding up, the list. Some teachers and coaches will encourage you to make a list of what it is you want in a soulmate. I'm a fan of this idea for one simple reason, and that is you can't have what you want if you don't know what it is. However, I believe that we also need to know what we don't want and be able to say no if it shows up. And I'm not talking about being overly persnickety about every little detail about someone. I'm talking about the desires and the deal breakers. Love yourself enough to find out what it is you desire in a relationship, and then love yourself enough to allow it in.
It's a great point too, because I know that you have a great story in your own life about the value of lists in terms of attracting the right relationship. I also have the same kind of story. I was like kind of the recipient of it because Louise was the one who had the list and I matched her list.
Right?
But I love the point that you make here. I mean, it's great to have a list that identifies all the things that you're looking for. I think it's a fabulous, fabulous thing to do. But you make a wonderful point. It's also good to know what you don't want.
Yeah. And what your deal breakers are.
You can't get what you want until you know what you don't want. It's not possible.
True. Yeah. Yeah. You know, that list, that was kind of amazing because when I was still in my first marriage, I went to see a counselor when things were getting really rough. And the counselor said to me, I want you to get a notebook and I'm going to give you some homework. I want you to go home and I want you to write a list of what you would want in your spouse. And I'm not talking about, she said to me, I'm not talking about what you think your spouse can become. I'm talking about if the sky was the limit and you had a magic wand and you could just have whatever your spouse be, whatever you wanted, what would you want? Well, that was a hard list to make. Because number one, you know, I have given that assignment before, but usually it's to someone who is single and wanting a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
But I was married.
Right.
Right. And so I wasn't looking for a relationship. I had a relationship. I just wanted this relationship to work.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happened is I wrote that list of what I wanted and what I didn't want. When I wrote the list of what I wanted, I realized how big the gap was.
Yeah.
Right. It was like, it sort of made me feel even worse because I thought, oh my gosh, this can never happen. Like really, I didn't think it could happen. And I realized that and I put that notebook away in a cupboard. That was that. And 3 years later, I got divorced. And 5 years later, I met a man. And in the process of us dating, I was looking for something and I found that notebook and I opened it up and it was him.
That's wild.
So, you know, I wasn't super persnickety about the list, right? I didn't list 100 things that this person had to be. But I listed a dozen things and I listed a few things that weren't going to fly. Right? And that was that. You know, years later, he showed up. All right. So
before you go on, I want to comment on that because I think it's a really, really important point here. You mentioned how to give you clarity, but it wasn't comfortable. I mean, because you were seeing this big difference between what your old relationship was like, what you were currently in at the time that you wrote
right.
it, and what you had written down. And the reason I want to point that out is the word clarity, because Abraham Hicks has pointed out that clarity is a very high vibration place. It is equivalent to love. It's equivalent to joy. It's equivalent
to
happiness.
Yeah.
It's right at that level. And so even though it was uncomfortable, just by being clear, you were setting yourself up for joy, for happiness, for love, mm-hmm. for all the things you were looking for, just because you were willing to be clear.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's not always easy to get clear. Sometimes we don't know what we want.
Mm-hmm.
We usually know what we don't want. But we have to just take the time to get there. So yeah, it was definitely a moment of clarity for sure.
Yeah.
So we'll wind up with this last thing in the book, the soulmate relationship. So, lovely magician, are you ready to create a soulmate relationship? This relationship will allow you to experience your highest joy and your deepest growth. You are a powerful creator and can absolutely have the relationship you desire. It will come into your life when you have opened to receive it. It will appear when you are willing to love yourself fully and accept every single thing about yourself with no judgment and only love. You will find that once you begin to do this, you will begin attracting people into your life that fully accept you and love you as you are. Your soulmate relationship will be full of love, passion, and mutual respect. It will never be abusive. It will be a relationship between two equals that love and cherish each other. And it starts with you cherishing you. I hope this little guide has been helpful to you. I sincerely wish you an abundance of blessings and a soulmate relationship that is beautiful beyond your wildest dreams. And I absolutely know that it is possible for you. And I can't wait to hear your soulmate story.
That's a great ending to a beautiful ebook that you wrote there. Really, really good. I want to ask you about something. Because especially the way you ended it, which is a beautiful ending, does this mean that when you find and attract that special someone who matches everybody on your list, that everything will be hunky-dory?
No, it doesn't. And yes, it
does. I love the answer.
Here's why. It depends on how you define hunky-dory. Because life on Earth is messy.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's painful. How do I know? Because we're wired for pain. We're wired for pleasure too.
Yep.
But you go stick your hand on a hot stove and you find out quickly that you are also wired for pain.
Absolutely.
And so we came here to experience everything. And we also came here to discover that we are powerful creators. So in the process of radical responsibility, where you're taking responsibility for your own experience, you know, you will bump up against things that don't feel comfortable. And so in my relationship, we rarely have disagreements. We rarely have uncomfortable moments. But that doesn't mean we never have them.
Right.
Because if you never have them, then one of you isn't thinking for themselves.
This is true.
Right? So, you know, humans are, we are smart and we have opinions and ideas. And what we want is to be compatible and to have great chemistry. And then we'll have a relationship that feels wonderful. And there will still be moments when you're uncomfortable, but you'll be uncomfortable together and you'll have support from each other. It doesn't mean that nothing uncomfortable ever happens again. Probably most of the uncomfortable things that happen, though, will not be rooted in your relationship. They'll be rooted in something else, and then you can support each other through it instead of fight each other through it.
Exactly.
Right? So, yeah.
And that's a huge difference, and I'm glad you outlined it that way, because Louise and I have found the same thing in our relationship, that the relationship itself has gotten us through a lot of stuff.
Right?
And stuff has come up within the relationship. But the beauty of it is, because so much of what we are together is in agreement with each other and is respectful and is loving and all the stuff that you were talking about in the ebook, when stuff does come up, first of all, it doesn't take very long to work through it. Actually, we work through it pretty quickly. I mean, I've heard so many tales from people saying, well, you know, marriage is a compromise. You're always having to compromise. Louise and I haven't had to compromise about anything. Ever. We don't ever compromise. We disagree about things. We find out, you know, okay, you like potato, I like potato, so we'll figure out some way to, you know, live with the fact that you like potato and I like potato, but you know, it's not compromising. It's not, there's no compromise needed.
There's a higher level of relationship than compromise.
Yes.
Compromise always looks like a win-lose.
Yes.
Someone's giving up something. But that higher level is a higher level of energy. And it's the level of energy that's a win-win.
Yes.
Right. Exactly. And so the best relationships are where both people think they're the one getting the better end of the deal.
Yeah, I guess that's true. I hadn't thought of it that way, but you're right. That is what happens. Yeah, that's good stuff. So wonderful. Well, thank you for being the reader of your own ebook for the last two episodes. And this has been a good discussion. This has been equal to anything we ever did with Neville or Abraham Hicks or any of the
other. Oh, wow. Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I loved every moment.
Yeah, it's been great. And next week we're going to be, we're going to go back to basics next week. We're going to make another program for cable local access. So that'll be something to look forward to. But in the meantime, I hope you have a wonderful week, Cindy.
Thank you.
I hope everything continues to be that wonderful relationship that you've had every single day for the last 10 years. I know it will be, but I wish it anyway. And I also wish to our listeners, thank you to anyone tuning into the live stream. I actually wasn't paying close attention, but hopefully you're enjoying it as well. And especially thank you to our podcast listeners as well. We'll see you all next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye, everyone.